Chapter 5 Inca Memories. The next 10 days passed uneventfully. Through past training, I never went to sleep without holding my attention upon the great God-self within, and sending a thought of loving gratitude to Saint Germain. On the evening of the 11th day, while retiring, I heard his voice say distinctly, "Come." I had learned to obey that call, and immediately stood outside of my body, passed quickly through space, and in a few moments came to the Royal Teton. He stood upon its side awaiting my arrival. This time he had called me to come to where he was. I obeyed and saluted him. "At your service," I said, stepping to his side. And smiling at me, he replied, "We have work to do. Let us go." I was fully aware of the direction in which we traveled, certain we were going a little west of south. Soon we saw the lights from a city in Saint Germain. Directing my attention to them, remarked, "Los Angeles." After traveling some distance farther on, we passed over another lighted section, and this time to my inquiry, he answered, "Mexico City." We then came to a tropical forest and began to descend. Presently we stood upon the old ruins of an ancient temple. "These are the ruins of Mitla, in the state of Oaxaca, Mexico," he explained. "You three came into embodiment to give assistance as the Inca civilization reached its apex. With the approval of the ascended masters who were directing, you chose to come into the Inca family to give the service needed at that time. Here you were born as the children of an Inca ruler, who was a strong soul, of great growth and illumination. In deep love for his people, he called to the one supreme God for light, abundance, and perfection to bless them and the land. The Inca's devotion to his source was very great, for he knew and consciously acknowledged the power of the great central sun. This true understanding was taught to the Incan people, and because they knew to what the great central sun referred, used the sun as the symbol of the Godhead. They had real inner understanding, and acknowledged the fullness of the power from this great central sun, which today we call the Christ, for it is the heart of the Christ activity of the universe. Because of the Inca ruler's devotion to both his source and the people, his deep desire for blessing and light to guide and help them was granted, and 14 from the Golden City over the Sahara Desert responded to give him assistance. You, Lotus, and your son were 3 of that 14. When you were 10, Lotus 12 and your son 14, all were placed under my care and direction to be prepared and trained for the work you did later. At that time I resided in the Golden City, but after the preliminary attunement had taken place, I came to the palace daily and gave the necessary radiation and instruction. This continued for 4 years before it was revealed to your father. The Inca ruler was amazed at the wisdom of his children, and constantly poured out his praise and gratitude to God for thus blessing him. When you were 14, the same great cosmic master who had taken us all to the Golden City at the end of the embodiment in the Sahara civilization appeared to the Inca and told him his petition had been granted in a very real manner. It was from this time on, for over 70 years, that the Incan civilization came to its greatest height. I came daily from the time you were 14, instructed and attuned the Inca ruler as well as you three. You were referred to as the Inca children from the sun. His gratitude, love, and cooperation were wonderful indeed, and he was taught to understand and use the great cosmic law. Your childhood and youth were wonderful, for no cloud came to mar the beauty of that training. Your son was taught the laws of government and the divine duties of a ruler, Lotus, the inner work, and given the full law and consecration of priestess in the temple of the sun. You were taught the cosmic laws of the priesthood, also secretly, the generalship of armies. After 10 years of special training in Peru, all three of you were sent north to one of the new colonies of the Incan Empire for the purpose of helping the people to expand their activities and stimulate their progress. You went forth with all the love, honor, and blessing the Inca ruler knew how to give, and established the capital of the colony at what is now Mitla, in the state of Oaxaca, Mexico, whose glory has come down through the centuries. Here you built a great temple under the direction of those in the Golden City, by whom you had been instructed and helped. Lotus was called Mitla in that life, and it was as in honor of her that the city was named. Here she served as priestess for more than 40 years. It was one of the most magnificent temples of that period, and no expense was spared, for the secret part of it built below the surface of the earth was to remain, and bear witness to that splendid civilization centuries later. You knew this at the time it was built, and certain definite orders were given and fulfilled concerning it. Because the entire construction was directed by one of the great ascended masters from the Golden City. The outer part was made of massive stones, some of which may still be seen today among the ruins. The interior was lined with marble, onyx, and jade. The jade came from a secret source in the Andes Mountains that has never been revealed to anyone. The coloring of the interior decorative work was most artistic and beautiful, the main color scheme being gold, purple, rose, and shell pink. The inner sanctuary was gold, with designs in purple and white. The chair in which the priestess officiated was also of gold. Here the spiritual power was focused and maintained, which radiated out to the empire and its people. With this explanation as a preliminary, we will now enter the subterranean temple, in which a room has been preserved amidst the ruins of a once great glory. We went some distance farther away when Saint Germain commanded, "Stand back." He focused a ray of mighty power on a pile of great rocks before us. Suddenly, they were thrown in every direction, uncovering a cube of rose-colored granite. He stepped forward and placed his hand upon it. Slowly it turned as if on a pivot, revealing an opening about 3 feet wide with well-defined steps leading downward. We descended 21 steps to a door that seemed to be made of copper. But Saint Germain said it was a combination of metals, alloyed, so as to make it imperishable. Pressing on a cube of rock to the right of the entrance, the door swung slowly open and admitted us into a small room. At the farther side was a great archway, closed by another massive door. This time he pressed his foot upon a stone of peculiar design in the floor, and the door moved back, disclosing a chamber of immense proportions that seemed very much in need of cleansing and ventilation. No sooner had the thought entered my mind than the place became filled with a powerful violet light, followed by a soft white haze, becoming brilliant as a noonday sun. The cleansing was complete, for everything was fresh, clean, and filled with the fragrance of roses. As we entered the great room, my attention was held by a number of the most remarkable portraits I have ever seen. They were etched on solid gold, in colors true to life. These, Saint Germain explained, are also indestructible. 5 of them are of the Inca ruler, Lotus, your son, you, and myself, all in the likeness of the bodies we used at that time. It was only during the Incan period that this particular kind of art has ever been expressed. through the devotion of Lotus to her own god flame at that time, she attracted a great master from Venus who taught her. That kind of art was different from anything known on Earth in any age. The master from Venus only allowed a certain number to be made, because this particular type of art was centuries ahead of its time, and therefore was not permitted to be used at that period of the world's development. However, it will come forth in the present golden age into which we have now entered. My son, oh, that the people of America could only understand what tremendous possibilities stand before them. Waiting, waiting, waiting for them to turn away from creeds, cults, dogmas, isms, and all else that binds and limits. By keeping their attention from the great God present within their own hearts. Oh, that they might realize what freedom, power, and light await their service, dependent only on their recognition and use of the great loving presence within, breathing through them each moment. Know and feel the almighty control it has over all manifestation. Oh, could they only realize that their bodies are the temples of the Most High, a living God, who is ruler of heaven and earth, that they might know what it means to love that mighty self, talk to it, acknowledge it in all things, and feel the reality of that presence with at least as great a certainty as they do other persons and things. If they could only feel the closeness and reality of the great presence deeply, even for a moment, nothing could ever again stand between them and the same mighty supreme accomplishment as Jesus and other ascended masters have attained. O America, beloved children of the light, let this great God presence, its wisdom and power surge through you now, and see how quickly God's kingdom can and will manifest upon earth. America is the way shore among the nations, bearing the light that heralds the incoming golden age. Regardless of her present conditions, that light shall burst forth and consume the shadows that seek to disrupt her ideals and love for the great God Self. We then passed through a door at the right, where we found more imperishable records, this time of the Incan civilization, and the important part it played in that cycle. You recalled the process for making these records from the memory of your life 14,000 years ago, remarked Saint Germain. They will be transported to the Royal Teton together with the portraits, for this secret temple has completely fulfilled its usefulness and is now to be dissolved. Soon, beautiful, glistening beings appeared and removed the portraits and records. When they had finished, he returned to the entrance. We walked to some distance away. Saint Germain focused his attention for a few moments upon the position of the secret temple and stood very silent. I felt a sudden stillness grip and hold me motionless. There was a great rumbling like an earthquake. In a moment all was over, and the secret temple, which had been the most magnificent creation of its day, collapsed into ruins. I could but gasp at Saint Germain's stupendous power. Truly the great ascended masters are gods. It is no wonder in the mythology of the ancients that their activities have been brought down to us in the guise of myth and fable. They wield tremendous god power at all times, because they hold with unwavering determination to the great god presence, and hence all power is given unto them, for they are all perfection. When Jesus said, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, the works that I do shall ye do also, and greater works than these shall ye do," he knew whereof he spoke, continued Saint Germain. He came forth to reveal the conscious dominion and mastery that it is possible for every human being to attain and express while still here on earth. He showed the dominion of the ascended master, and proved to mankind that it is possible for everyone to so call forth his God-self that he can consciously control all things human. The great ascended masters of love, light, and perfection, who have guided the expansion of the light in humanity on this planet from the beginning, are no figment of anyone's imagination. They are real, visible, tangible, glorious, living, breathing beings, all such love, wisdom, and power that the human mind gasps at the immensity of it. They work everywhere in the universe with complete freedom and limitless power to do naturally all that the average individual considers supernatural. They are wielders of such power and manipulators of such force as to stagger the imagination of the person in the outer world. They are the guardians of the race, and as in the world of physical education, various grades of teachers are provided to guide the development of the individual's growth from childhood to maturity and then beyond, preparing him for special work, so do the ascended masters of perfection exist to educate and help the individual, that he too may expand his consciousness beyond ordinary human expression. Thus he develops his superhuman attributes, until, like the student graduating from college, the one under the care and instruction of an ascended master graduates out of his humanity into the full continuous expression of his divinity. The ascended master is an individual who by self-conscious effort has generated enough love and power within himself to snap the chains of all human limitation. And so he stands free and worthy to be trusted with the use of forces beyond those of human experience. He feels himself the oneness of omnipresent God, life. Hence all forces and things obey his command, because he is a self-conscious being of free will, controlling all by the manipulation of the light within himself. It is through the radiation or outpouring of this light, which is really his own luminous essence of divine love, that an ascended master is able to help those who come under his care and direction. When such an outpouring to a student takes place, his own inner bodies, and by that I mean his emotional, mental, and causal bodies, absorb the master's luminous essence, and the light within them glows and expands like a spark which one fans into a flame. This luminous essence has within it the highest force in the universe, for it dissolves all discord and establishes perfect balance in all manifestation. The ascended master's body is constantly pouring out rays of his light essence upon the discords of earth, dissolving them as the rays of force which we call light and heat from our physical sun dissolve a fog. The radiation they pour out to humanity on earth is consciously drawn energy to which they give quality, and again send it out to accomplish a definite result. In this way, they give protection thousands and thousands of times to persons, places, conditions, and things, of which mankind is totally oblivious, going on its appointed way, serenely unconscious of its protectors and benefactors. In this kind of activity, the ascended masters are able to change the bodies they function in, like one ordinarily changes his clothes. For the cellular structure is always under conscious control, and every atom is obedient to their slightest direction. They are free to use one or more bodies if the work they desire to do requires it, for their ability to assemble or dissolve an atomic body is absolutely unlimited. They are all powerful manifestors of all substance and energy, for the forces in nature which mean the four elements are their willing and obedient servants. These glorious beings who guard and help the evolving human race are called the ascended masters of love, light, and perfection. They are all the word master implies, because by bringing forth the love, wisdom, and power of the God-self within, They manifest their mastery over all that is human. Hence they have ascended into the next expression above the human, which is the superhuman, divinity, pure, eternal, all-powerful perfection. The humanity of earth frequently, in its ignorance and limitation, presumes to pass judgment upon and express various opinions about Jesus and many others of the ascended host. That practice is one of the most binding things it can indulge in, for in such activity the criticism and judgment sent forth in this way simply return to its generator, and thus mankind is bound more tightly to its self-created suffering and limitation. The activity of the law is that the ascended masters, having freed themselves from human limitations, have become a blazing outpouring of light into which no human thought of discord can possibly enter. This compels all destructive thought, creation, and feeling to return to its sender and bind him still more closely in the chains of his own creation. If human beings could see their own thoughts, feelings, and words go out into the atmosphere upon the ethers, gather and gather more of their kind, and return, they would not only be amazed at what they give birth to, but would scream for deliverance. And if for no other reason than to blot such creation out of mind, they would with full determination face their own divinity and enter into it. Thoughts and feelings are living, pulsating things. The individual who knows that will use his wisdom and control himself accordingly. Jesus is to mankind gaining its experience on this earth as the great God Self within every human being is to the personal or outer self. He revealed the master record to the outer world, and he is still the living proof of the individual's ability to free himself from all limitation and to express divinity as was originally intended. For the first condition in which humanity existed was wholly harmonious and free. When some of those individuals who study life and the laws of the universe more deeply than the mass of Earth's children become aware of the fact that there are ascended masters, they often desire to go to these great ones for instruction. While in many instances this is an unconscious upreaching of the soul within to the greater light, yet the personal self little realizes in what relation it stands to those great beings who are wholly divine. There is a way by which an intensely earnest and determined student may make contact with one of them, but that can only be through the activity of enough love and discipline of the personality. If the motive for such contact be for the gratification of curiosity, thinking to prove or disprove the ascended master's existence, to merely solve a problem, or to convince a doubt in the personality, it will never come about. Rest assured of that, for the ascended host are never concerned with satisfying the human side of any student. Their entire effort is with the expansion of the God Self within, so that its power may be released forcefully enough to snap the limitations in the human self that do not give it a perfect vehicle for use in the mental, emotional, and physical worlds of manifestation. These are the realms of thought, feeling, and action. Human weaknesses and limitations simply impair the vehicle that should be trained and kept in the best possible condition as an efficient servant for the use of the great inner God Self. The human body with its faculties is God's temple of energy, which the great God Presence provides, and through this outer self it wishes to express a perfect divine plan or design. If the uncontrolled sense appetites and demands of the personality waste the God energy, so the inner presence is not given command of the vehicle, it steadily withdraws, the human self loses the power to manipulate mind and body, the temple collapses into decrepitude and dissolution. We then have the condition the world calls death. The person who seeks to contact an ascended master in the visible, tangible, living, breathing body without the preparation needed to gradually attune his own outer structure and mind, is in the same position a child in kindergarten would be were he to see a college professor and insist on learning the ABCs under him. The ascended masters are really great batteries of tremendous power and energy, and whatever touches their radiance becomes highly charged with their light essence through the same activity that makes a needle kept in contact with a magnet take on its qualities and become a magnet also. All their help and radiation is forever a free gift of love. This is the reason they never use any of their force to compel. The law of love, the law of the universe, and the law of the individual do not permit the ascended master to interfere with the free will of the individual, except at those periods of cosmic activity in which the cosmic cycle supersedes that of the individual. It is during these times the ascended master may give more than ordinary assistance. The earth has entered such a cycle now, and the greatest outpouring of the light the earth has ever known is being and will continue to be shed upon humanity to purify it and reestablish the order and love that is imperative for the future maintenance of our planet and the system of worlds to which we belong. All that does not or will not come into the action of order, balance, and peace must of necessity pass into some other schoolroom of the universe and work out its own understanding of this law in some other way than is to be the expression of the future life upon our planet. There is only one passport into the presence of these great ones, and that is enough love poured out to one's own God-self and to them, united with the determination to root out of the human all discord and selfishness. When an individual becomes determined enough to serve only the constructive plan of life, he disciplines perfectly his human nature, no matter how unpleasant the task. Then he will automatically draw to himself the attention of an ascended master, who will take note of his struggles and pour out courage, strength, and love sustaining him, until he maintains the feeling of his permanent contact with the inner God self. The ascended master knows and sees all concerning the student, for he reads clearly the record which the student has made in his own aura. This reveals the state of the disciple's development, his strength, as well as his weakness. The ascended master is the all-knowing mind and all-seeing eye of God, for from him nothing can be hidden. The one who wishes to come into the visible, tangible presence of the ascended host should understand that unless he makes himself a radiating sun of love, light, and perfection, which the master can expand and use as a part of himself, that he can direct to any place consciously at will, he would be useless, merely a barnacle and drain upon the master's work and world. If the student has not, be not willing to, or does not discipline the personal self, so it is calm in mind, peaceful and loving in feeling, strong in body, he is not material that the ascended master can use in the more than human work that he does. When the student has not a strong, controlled, well-developed vehicle, he is unable to cooperate with an ascended master, and thus do work of a kind which is beyond that of ordinary human experience. Were one of these perfected beings to take a student without such qualities into his field of work, he would be making the same mistake one does in building a machine or home if he constructs it of imperfect material. That kind of material naturally could not stand unusual strain, under sudden need, or prolonged service. Thus, it would not be the part of wisdom, love, or mercy to subject anyone to an experience for which he has neither the training nor is strong enough to bear. As the ascended masters are the acme of perfection, they naturally would not do anything except that which is just, loving, and wise. The attitude of one who wishes to work in conscious cooperation with the ascended host should not be, I wish I could go to them for instruction, but rather, I will so purify, discipline, and perfect myself, become such an expression of divine love, wisdom, and power, that I can assist in their work. Then I will automatically be drawn unto them. I will love so constantly, so infinitely, so divinely, that the very intensity of my own light will open the way for them to accept me. My son, self-correction and control of the forces within the use of human consciousness is not the work of a moment, nor a path of ease, lethargy, and self-gratification, for the senses riot within the average human being, and he rebels furiously against the restraint of his lower nature, which is imperative if he is to govern these forces properly within himself, especially in his feelings, so they may be used and act only under the conscious dominion of his God-mind. The saying that many are called but few are chosen is very true. All are constantly being called, but few are awake enough to realize the ecstatic joy and perfection within the God-self, and to hear its voice in the light, forever and forever calling everyone back into the Father's house. Every individual on earth is free each moment to arise and go unto the Father, his God-self, if he will but turn his back upon the creation of the human senses, and hold his attention on the only source in the universe from which peace, happiness, abundance, and perfection can come. There is a way for all to come into contact with the ascended masters, and that is to think upon them, call unto them, and they will answer every call with their own presence of love. But the motive for the call must be love of the one source, love of the light, love of perfection. If this be real, determined, and steadfast, the student will receive greater and greater light, for the light knows its own, and gives of itself unceasingly, unconditionally, every moment. Ask, and ye shall receive. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. Seek, and ye shall find. Call unto the light, and the ascended masters will answer you, for they are the light of this world. Lotus served as a priestess in the temple of Mitla for more than 40 years with you and your son. By the combined efforts of you three, the various cities and the colonies were brought to a state of great perfection. You established industries and directed the agriculture until prosperity abounded in the land. It was revealed to the Inca ruler that he was to finish his earthly pilgrimage and service in that civilization. It was then he called the three of you home to him. Others were appointed to take your places, and with blessings and love to your people, you bade them farewell. On your arrival home, the king was much surprised to find none of you had aged during the long absence. Your youthful appearance was the result of training received in childhood, and still greater proof that his children had been divinely sent in answer to his prayer. Deep gratitude to the one mighty God for blessing him, his children, and the people always filled his heart. At this point, as Saint Germain described the Incan embodiments, living pictures began to appear in the atmosphere before me, all in their original color and activity. They lasted for nearly 3 hours, and he revealed those ancient experiences as a living reality in Peru and Mitla. The Inca ruler called the 14 from the Golden City together in preparation for the most important event of his earthly pilgrimage. He knew the hour of passing was near, and the affairs of the empire had to be transferred into the control of the elder son, whom he was to appoint his successor at the banquet. The palace was famous for centuries as the most magnificent building of the period, because the king had tremendous resources at his command throughout the entire reign. He lived close to his God-self at all times, and wealth untold flowed into his use. The interior of the palace was most ornate, private rooms of the royal family being decorated in pure gold, set with jewels, and the symbol of the sun used wherever possible as a constant reminder of the God-self within. The banquet hall was set with 5 tables of carved jade, resting on white onyx pedestals, each seating 20 people, with the exception of the royal table, at which were 16, these being the 14 from the Golden City, the king, and the master, Saint Germain, who was then known as Son Uriel. Chairs at the king's table were made of gold, slightly canopied with gorgeous ostrich plumes in magnificent colors. In the Inca's chair, the plumes were a beautiful violet, in Saint Germain's an intense gold, the daughter's pink, the eldest son's violet, but of a lighter shade than the ruler's, and those in the chair of the younger son white, representing the authority of the priesthood. Plumes in the chairs of the rest of the 14 from the Golden City were of varying colors, beautiful beyond description, the color in each case representing the office and service that each occupant gave to the empire. Cloths of a very soft material, heavily embroidered with thread of remarkable brilliancy, covered the tops of the tables. The entire palace was lighted by self-luminous crystal globes that Saint Germain gave to the Inca ruler when his instruction first began. The king wore a royal robe of golden metallic-like fabric with a marvelous jeweled breastplate representing the sun. Over this was his robe of office, made of rich purple fabric trimmed with magnificent ostrich plumes around the entire edge and a deep collar. His crown was a band of diamonds that held 3 violet plumes at the back. These 3 plumes, in the inner life of the ruler, symbolized the 3 activities of the Godhead, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, acting through man as love, wisdom, and power. The 2 sons were clothed in garments similar to their father's, except for the long robe of state, each wearing the symbol of the great sun formed by a breastplate of jewels. Crown of the elder son was set with emeralds, and the plumes at the back were violet like the king's, but of a lighter shade. The headdress of the other son was set with pearls, and his plumes were white, another symbol of his office as priest. The king's daughter was robed in a golden fabric fine as gossamer silk, with an overdrape of opalescent material, dazzling to behold, that changed color with every movement of the body. She wore a jeweled girdle of diamonds and emeralds, with its panel reaching nearly to the floor. On her head was a close-fitting cap of woven material, and around the neck a chain on which hung the symbol of the great sun, set in diamonds, rubies, and emeralds. Her sandals were of gold, also jeweled. Just as the king left his private chambers on the way to the banquet hall, a blazing light flashed through the rooms, and Saint Germain stood before us, looking like a god. The light about him was almost blinding in its brilliance, and it took us a few seconds to become accustomed to it. His beautiful golden hair hung to the shoulders and was held in place by a band of blue diamonds around the forehead. His own intense radiance shone through the color of the hair until it looked like sunlight. The piercing, sparkling violet of his eyes contrasted strongly against his skin that revealed the soft pink color of youth and perfect health. His features were very regular, like those of the ancient Greeks. He wore a robe of marvelous, dazzling white fabric, entirely different from anything in our modern world. It fitted the body slightly at the waist, around which was clasped a girdle of yellow diamonds and sapphires, with a panel reaching to his knees. On the third finger of his left hand was a ring set with a gorgeous yellow diamond, and on the middle finger of his right a sapphire, almost as brilliant, both blazing tremendously because of his own great radiation, as he had just come from the Golden City. The king was surprised and overjoyed at his appearance, and making the sign of the heart, the head, and the hand, bowed low before him and offered the master his arm. They proceeded thus into the banquet hall. Here, tables had been laid with an entire service of gold, crystal, and jade. Children of the king soon entered, and when they beheld their beloved master, were almost overcome with joy. However, they did not forget the dignity of the occasion, and making the divine sign he had taught them, bowed low before their father and distinguished guest. The signal was given, and all were seated. The king sat at the head of the table, the master, Saint Germain, at his right, and next to him his daughter. The elder son was placed at his left, and the younger son next, then the rest from the Golden City. At the close of the banquet, the ruler arose, and all gave complete attention. He stood silent a moment, and extending his hand to the beloved Saint Germain, introduced him to the guests. The master bowed graciously, and the king told them how the higher spiritual law had been taught to him and his children, and how the great blessings which had come to the land and its people were the result of the master's great love. He explained further that the banquet had been given for him to appoint his successor to the throne. He signaled to the elder son to rise and announced him as their future ruler. Removing the royal robe, he placed it upon the son's shoulders, and Saint Germain, raising his hands above him in blessing, said, "I bless you, my son, in the name and power of the one mighty God, in man and governing the universe, whose supreme wisdom shall direct you, whose light shall illumine you, whose love shall bless and enfold you, the land and its people." Touching the thumb of his right hand to the forehead of the son, the beloved master raised his left hand, and a blinding flash of light enfolded them. The king then appointed those who were to take the places of his daughter and two sons in the temple at Mitla. Saint Germain, the king, his children, and the rest of those from the Golden City proceeded into the throne room, where the master turned and again addressed them, saying, "Beloved ones of light, your brother, the king, will soon pass to his well-deserved rest and higher instruction. Until that time, I will remain with you. Your civilization will reach its apex under the rulership of this our beloved brother, and you will need much added wealth to accomplish all that is to be done. In the heart of the mountains, not far distant, is great treasure of gold and precious stones. The younger son of your ruler has not so far recalled a faculty he used formerly. I will quicken it into action again, that the requirement of your future activities be supplied." He stepped toward the younger son and touched his forehead with the thumb of his right hand. A tremor passed over the body, and his inner sight became opened. He saw in the mountain fastness a certain location, which held such vast wealth he knew they would need no other supply for whatever might be required to produce the things they were to use in the outer activities. The son made obeisance to his beloved master, and promised that with his assistance the plan for its use would be fulfilled. Three of the mines which he opened and operated were closed and sealed when the reign of those from the Golden City was finished. They have remained closed to this day. Archaeologists, in various ways from time to time, are finding evidence and proof of the tremendous height to which this civilization reached, and the splendor of its attainment. The fragments of the Incan activities they have discovered so far are of the civilization during its decline, but the day will come when that which was expressed at its apex will be revealed to the blessing, enlightenment, and service of posterity. The following day, messengers were sent to the principal points in the empire, announcing the ascension to the throne of the king's son. His reputation had preceded him from the city of Mitla, for his wisdom, nobility of character, and justice were known throughout the kingdom during the years he served there. A few days later, the younger son directed the head mining engineer to prepare equipment, men, and supplies for going into the mountains and opening the mine that he had been shown through the use of his inner sight. When they were ready to start, the son remained alone and held his attention fixed steadily on the God Self within, knowing that he would be directed unerringly in finding the mine, and because of this had no difficulty or delay in going directly to the location shown him in the vision. He put a large number of men to work, and in 60 days had opened the mine to the point where they made contact with the richest gold vein that has ever been located in South America, before or since that time. The discovery and operation of that mine has come down to the present day in legend among the people. The younger son returned from his achievement amidst the warm welcome of the people and received the blessings of his father, Saint Germain, his older brother and sister. The location of the mine was at an altitude of 8,000 feet, and during the time the king's son was there, he became highly sensitized, an activity that always occurs at high elevations. Upon his return to the palace, he felt clearly that time had arrived for the Inca ruler to make the great change, and knew his passing was near. The day arrived for the coronation of the king's son, when he was to assume legally and publicly the responsibility and duties of the realm. The royal family asked their beloved master and friend to perform the act of crowning the new ruler, to which he graciously agreed. Elaborate preparation for the important event had been completed, and the ceremony had progressed to the moment when the crown was to be placed upon the head of the new ruler. All noticed that Saint Germain made no effort to receive it. Suddenly there was a blinding flash of light, and before them stood a most wonderful being. She seemed to be a girl of only 18, but from her eyes and presence shone forth a dazzling radiance, filled with the love, wisdom, and power of a goddess. The light that filled the atmosphere around her was crystal white, sparkling within itself and scintillating constantly. Extending her dainty hands to the crown-bearer, she lifted the crown and with infinite grace placed it upon the head of the king's son, and in a voice that was the very soul of music said, "Beloved of the Golden City, I crown you with love, light, and wisdom, of which this crown is the symbol. May your justice, honor, and nobility ever continue. By a divine order I shall reign with you, invisible to all but those of the Golden City who are here." The new ruler knelt to receive the crown, and the wondrous being stooped and kissed his forehead. She then turned to the assembled guests, extended her hands, and blessed them. Immediately a soft rose-colored light filled the entire place, it being the outpouring of her love to them. She blessed the former king, and turning to his daughter held her in a fond embrace. To the younger son she extended her hand, and he, kneeling, kissed it with deep reverence. The new king ascended the throne and bowed to his guests. Offering his arm to the beautiful being, he led the way to the banquet hall, and here they celebrated the coronation by a feast. He gave the signal to be seated, and then addressed them. "My greatly beloved people," he said, "I know there is but one mighty presence, God in mankind and the universe governing all. It is my desire, as it ever has been, to so live that my mind and body are clear channels and perfect expressions of the one great indwelling presence. May you, my friends, my people, our land and its activity, be always blessed with God's greatest love, peace, health, and happiness. May this empire, which is God's domain, and of which we are but the custodians, continue in abundant prosperity. The love of God in me shall always enfold you, and I ask God's eternal light to raise you into his divine perfection. As the banquet progressed, the former king grew very pale. The new ruler signaled his brother, who stepped to his father's side and assisted him to the private rooms of the royal family. The king lay down and remained motionless nearly 4 hours. His children, the Master Saint Germain, and the beautiful being remained at his side. When the final moment of his earth span arrived, the beautiful being stepped forward to the head of the couch on which he lay and addressed him, saying, "Brother Inca, thou hast thought to leave thy form to the action of the four elements, but I say to thee, it shall be raised, transmuted and illumined into that eternal temple of God that expresses all perfection. Thy great service hath freed thee from the wheel of birth and so-called death. Be thou now received by the ascended host of light, with whom thou art forever one." Slowly, the body was raised into its eternal perfection, and then completely disappeared. Saint Germain turned to those who stood by. "My work here is finished," he said, and stepping forward, placed a ring of most unusual design upon the third finger of the king's right hand. Its jewel was a miniature, self-luminous globe of some kind of precipitated substance that looked like pearl, and directly within the center was a tiny blue flame. It was a focus of light, the same as the globes Saint Germain had given the king's father, with which the palace was lighted. "Accept this," he continued, "from the master of the Golden City. It is his request that you wear it upon your person always." Bidding them farewell, and bowing graciously, he disappeared from sight. The Inca's three children had perfect physical bodies due to the instruction they had received in childhood from the Master Saint Germain, when he came daily from the Golden City to prepare them for their life service to the people. All had most beautiful golden hair and violet blue eyes. The two sons were fully 6 feet 3 inches in height, and the daughter about 5 feet 7. There was a great natural dignity of bearing, suggesting the inner dominion which they had gained under his instruction. When the elder son ascended the throne, he was 68 years old, yet looked not more than 25. Even at the time they left the earth, none looked more than that age. The new king reigned 47 years, living to the age of 115. The daughter lived to be 113, and the younger son 111. The Incan people of that period were all dark-eyed and dark-haired, with skins like the American Indian. Those who incarnated as the mass of the Incan people were not souls of previous advanced knowledge, as was the case in some of the former civilizations, such as Egypt, Atlantis, and the Sahara Desert. For this reason, the great host of ascended masters who assist in expanding the light within humanity placed the Incan ruler, his children, and the rest of the 14 from the Golden City in charge of the government and its people, to establish the pattern upon which the later activities were to be molded. They designed a form of government and a plan of development which, if adhered to, would have enabled the entire civilization to reach a great height of outer accomplishment, and at the same time receive tremendous inner illumination. As the time drew near to select a ruler from among the Incans themselves, to succeed the king and his assistants, great care was taken to choose those whose inner growth was most advanced. 14 were found to take the places of those from the Golden City. The beautiful being had made herself visible to the king every day for 47 years, giving advice and assistance through her radiation, that wisdom and strength might be the directing power of the people. The successors to the king and the 14 from the Golden City were called into the presence of the much-loved and wise ruler, and the beautiful being, who had been invisible, made herself visible to all. The light about her grew very bright, and she addressed them, saying, "For over 90 years the great ascended masters of light have taught, enlightened, blessed, and prospered the people and this empire. The example is before you. If you follow it, all will continue to prosper and bless your land. If you do not keep the love for the one supreme God Self first in your hearts, and acknowledge him always as the ruler of the empire and its inhabitants, decay will set in, and the glorious perfection enjoyed for over a century will be forgotten. I commend you to the care of the great supreme presence in all. May he ever protect, direct, and enlighten you." Here a visible proof of the existence of the inner God Self of each human being was revealed to those who were to guide the destiny of the empire during the succeeding years. This same example will again be given to the present people of America. Then, in the presence of the new ruler and his associates, the king and the 14 from the Golden City stepped out of their bodies and revealed the divine self of each, visible to all assembled. In a few moments the physical bodies disappeared, dissolving in ambient air. Thus, explained Saint Germain, is revealed to you the record of another life, the blessing and achievement which results from loving acceptance of the supreme presence of the one God Self within. Let us now go back to the Royal Teton. We return to the entrance and passed forward to the audience chamber. There on its walls were the portraits etched in gold, transferred from the ancient temple of Mitla. We went on to the record room and saw the records carried by the beautiful glistening beings. Other things, too, had been brought, which I have not permission to reveal. As these experiences ended, I realized, at least partially, something of what real love is, for no one can possibly explain the intense feeling of love and gratitude one has for the ascended masters, after being permitted the experiences I had passed through since first meeting Saint Germain. It can never be put in words. There is only one overwhelming desire in life after such contact, and that is to be what they are. Then one comes to realize what Jesus meant by the Father's house, and where the home of the soul really is. Once he has really, even for the fraction of a second, experienced the ecstatic bliss radiating from an ascended being, there is nothing in human experience he would not endure or sacrifice in order to reach that height of attainment, and work for in order to express such dominion and love also. One really knows such perfection is for all of God's children, and is as real as reality can be. Even the happiest life lived by the average human being is certainly the husks of existence compared to the ascended state of these great ones. The most beautiful and so-called perfect creation of human beings, with all their boasted power and accomplishment, is coarse and crude compared to the freedom, beauty, glory, and perfection that is the daily, continual experience of every one who has raised the body as Jesus did. I was almost overwhelmed by a feeling of gratitude and love to Saint Germain as it came time to return to my body. He realized how I felt and understood my position. "My son," he said, "you cannot receive but has not been earned. You deserve this and much more, which will become evident as we advance. Remember, however, what seems mysterious only appears so because it is unexplained. When understood, all unusual occurrences will be found natural and according to law. The following truth shall remain engraved on your memory forever. It is this: every one of God's children who will acknowledge and accept the presence of the one mighty God, anchored within his heart and brain, and feel that truth deeply many times a day, realizing and knowing God fills his mind and body so full of light there is no room for anything else, he can be free. The one all-powerful presence is the mighty harmonious activity of one's life and affairs. And if his attention be fixed firmly with determination on this eternal truth, no height of attainment is too great for him to reach. There is but one source and principle of life to which we should give our undivided attention, and that is the God Self within every individual. To the great harmonious Self, the personal Self should give conscious recognition at all times and keep in constant inner communion with it, no matter what the outer activity of the mind is. This one great Self is the life energy flowing through every human body each moment, by which all are enabled to move about in the world of form. It is the wisdom flowing through the mind, the will directing all constructive activities, the courage and strength sustaining every one, the feeling of divine love with which all force can be qualified as it flows through the individual, the only power that can ever accomplish any good thing. It is the all-victorious, conscious dominion over every condition of human activity, when released through the personal Self without resistance or interruption. This mighty God Self within you is the supreme ruler of all creation, and the only dependable, permanent, and eternal source of help in existence. Only through its love, wisdom, and power can anyone ever rise into the ascended mastery, for constant, conscious communion with it is freedom and dominion over all human creation. When I say human creation, I mean all that is discordant and less than perfect. We returned to my body, and as soon as I had re-entered it, Saint Germain took my hands and poured a stream of his divine energy through me to sustain and give strength. I instantly felt revivified in both mind and body. I sat down, fixed my attention with deep intensity upon my own God presence, and offered up a prayer of gratitude for the tremendous blessings I had been privileged to receive. He bowed graciously and disappeared.